And with a look at our local trails on the fun with us from Mountain Trails, Charlie Sturgis, good morning.
All right. So first thing, we have Jupiter Peak Steeplechase coming up. So we will be starting and finishing the race over at the resort, in which case that means that the Silver Spur area is going to be a little busy until at least noon. So if you can find an alternative route up the mountain, that would be great. Things like Armstrong and certainly the new trail over on Sweeney's area on Treasure Hill that will get you to Flat Cable and on to Jenny's will be good alternatives. Plus, just getting up high and riding some of the old town stuff that's in the shade should be pretty pleasant. So those are some good alternatives. And we should be out of there easily by 1 o'clock or so. We'll be done. If you are still need to register for the steeplechase, you can do that at Jan's tonight, starting at, I think, 3:30, and we go until 6. So just keep that in mind. And then also be aware that the archery event that's going on over the canyons will be crisscrossing over Mid-Mountain some. They won't be shooting arrows over Mid-Mountain, but you will see people that will be dressed in hunting garb and so forth, and it's a big event, so it's kind of cool that it's out there, but if you're going to be riding Mid-Mountain, it's going to be a little disconcerting maybe when you get over there, so just be aware it's not people hunting, it's just people who do some target stuff. Outside of that, you know, we look like we're going to have a great weekend, so I think get out and enjoy it. It's going to be hot, carry extra water, certainly make sure you have proper rehydration stuff with you the whole time, because it is definitely hottest days of the summer so far.
Okay, Charlie, thanks. Well, last night, the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation hosting its anti-gala event last night, the biggest fundraiser of the year, a no-frills party for them. In the studio with an update on that, as well as some other things happening at our local Olympic venues, I have the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how did the anti-gala go? Did you raise some money?
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. Probably our best one ever. And probably a little over 400 people in attendance last night. And all had a very good time.
All right. Any idea how much you raised?
Not quite yet. We did very well. Probably all of our key initiatives that we were looking for, I think everybody was super supportive of.
Okay. And you say no frills fundraiser, what, just that people show up or they don't have to show up, just have to pay a fee to not show up?
Well, it's we've done this. This is the fourth year. And the whole premise of calling it anti-gala was to really kind of make it, you know, opposite your typical black tie formal. So it's shorts and T-shirts and right in the base of the Nordic Flats below the K90 and the K120 ski jump. It's just a fantastic layout. My staff, Lisa and Ryan, who put on this event, they did a phenomenal job. Beautiful environment, nice night, even with a little early rain that threatened, just kind of cooled us off.
So in terms of the money, how is that then distributed? Does it just go into the general fund?
Portions of that, but we also have a specific, we had a paddle raise for what we call our Healthy Communities Initiative. This actually started down at the Olympic Oval in Kearns, and it's specifically targeted to raise funds for those who would receive scholarships into our Learn To programs, and for those that might not otherwise be able to afford the program. So it's been super successful in Kearns. And we're going to broaden that into the Heber Valley and here in Summit County.
Okay. Let's see. What's going on with the athlete housing, basically the new hotel there on the hill?
It's been probably one of my favorite construction projects of all time. It was a year ago, right at the anti-gala event that we put on, was we did the groundbreaking. So we're within a month and a half of opening. And as everybody can kind of see as they come past Kimball Junction, it's a testament for us to an investment in our athletes and an investment in the staff that work at the Olympic Park.
So what have we got there?
It's a four-story, 55,000-square-foot building, 72 units, mostly of one- and two-bedroom configurations, and about 43 of the 72 units are year-round apartments. 29 are short-term athlete housing stay facilities. And not extravagant at all. It's, you know, everywhere, mostly the square footage is between 400 and 850 square feet for these one and two bedroom units, and price points are quite low. This is affordable housing. Overnight stays for athletes coming into town for a week or two of training, 40 to 50 bucks per athlete per night.
Okay, so is it more of a, are they shared bathrooms, or do they each have their,
each unit has their own? Again, most of the building is year-round apartments for our employees and for athletes who want to call Park City home and base here. And those, the layouts, we did lots of focus groups with our athletes and learned lots to make sure we designed and set this up to be really well for the future.
Yeah. So in terms of being able to afford those affordable rates, I mean, the cost of construction, as we know, is huge. Can you tell us about the final cost and how that was paid?
Sure. The building itself was approximately $11 million. The total project, when I had to move a lot of utilities and put in a new road and all the site work, all told, were $14 million on the project.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do cheap rents then help pay that back?
It was, you know, to me, it's an interesting exercise. As obviously, affordable housing is a key priority in town here. We ended up financing this through tax-free municipal bonds with the help of Summit County. That was huge for us. So we got a very attractive rate. Zions Bank stepped up to provide us the financing, and we basically are earning just enough on the annual revenues associated with the short-term and long-term revenues to cover our debt service, and so that's essentially how we made this happen.
Okay, so it's basically a wash.
And again, for us, obviously having the land in a critical spot, it's right below the ski jumps there, close to the services of Kimball Junction, and fantastic views for the athletes and the staff. As I've been doing tours lately, people are just blown away. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, do you have parking on site?
Yep, surface parking right behind, tucked behind the building, and all the types of services you would hope as an athlete or a staff. And again, for us, it's a commitment on the part of our Legacy Foundation to, you know, put employees and athletes as a key priority, and having those staff and athletes be able to live right at the place they're either working or training is a big priority for me.
Yeah. So at this point, has demand outpaced supply?
We have a good process going. We're going to end up kind of putting staggered starts to try to help time people's leases that they're ending in certain locations to be able to come in the building here. And so, yes, I'm already planning project number two.
Same location?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, then, so how do you decide who gets in?
Of course, I mean, this is subsidized housing, so we are providing this at very less than market rate. We have a bit of a complicated process, but we're certainly valuing winter sport athletes and staff who work for the park or for the Legacy Foundation, and we've got a whole criteria of how we review those applications and make those decisions.
Yeah. So who's managing this?
I'm happy to say we promoted from within Cassie Ravelli, who essentially has grown up at the Olympic Park since the late 90s into the 2000s. She was a skeleton athlete and has worked at the park since 2004, and she knows everything what the athletes and staff would like in the facility, and she's going to do a terrific job.
So is phase two part of the original approval?
Yep, we had in the original master plan a series of housing projects. So this is building number one.
Okay, so is two the end of it then, or
no? We've got other housing setups, but those will be down the road a bit.
Okay, so when does phase two start?
we're just in a little bit of the early conceptual design, and we'll see TBD on when we actually get that project going.
Okay. Do you have any other projects happening either at the park or Soldier Hollow?
Yeah, the Mountain Expansion Project, which is an exciting project for us to expand the ski terrain behind the two museums. That we're underway for that. We're going to be doing a ribbon cutting coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm sorry, a groundbreaking for that one. And then we'll move in a couple of years over to the what we call the West Peak, just to the right of the bobsled track. But we need to raise a little more money for that portion.
Okay. So when do you hope to have that operating?
Well, this winter for phase one. So we're just knocking them out one project after the next. So this phase one behind the museums up at the park will provide early season training for Park City Ski and Snowboard, Romark, University of Utah. There's a definite need to focus on making snow when it gets cold and getting opportunities locally for athletes to train.
So will this be exclusively for alpine racers?
No, as you know, that back hill, we've got our small ski jumps, the 10, 20, 40-meter ski jumps. We've got beginner sort of park and pipe little features for the kids learning there. And we've got moguls training lanes and alpine training lanes. So it's a little more focused on the younger ages. And obviously with our partners over at Park City Mountain Resort and Deer Valley, we kind of have setups just for all the ages that we need to.
Okay. How much money are you short at this point?
We're still looking to raise about $2.5 million more out of an $11 million capital campaign. We've got much more than that, but the portion of what our Legacy Foundation is trying to source is about another $2.5 million. Locally, the Park City Ski and Snowboard and Romark have committed to raising $3 million each. And so they're individually trying to raise those funds, and they're getting there.
All right. And as we reported last month, the International Olympic Committee awarding Milan and Cortina to host the 2026 Winter Olympics. So is Utah then still on track then to be a nominee for the 2030 Games?
Absolutely. And, you know, for me, it's not a matter of if they'll return. It's a matter of when. And either 2030 or 2034 are the talking points for us at this point.
Yeah. When does that decision happen in terms of the IOC making that announcement?
The IOC, in their same week, they announced Milan Cortina as the host for 2026. They also, maybe a little lesser news coverage of this part, but they're changing the whole process of how they're going to select future cities, both for winter and summer. It'll be less of a, you know, five cities vying and giving presentations. It's going to be a more negotiated process, which I think really helps us here in Utah, because we aren't just a location that will have a promise to do things. We can point to all of our Olympic venues, every one of them still being used, and all what we're doing to continue to invest and use them. We are four times busier in use of these facilities today than we were right after the O2 games. Nobody in the rest of the world can say that.
Mm. So does the Utah Exploratory Committee, I mean, does it continue to work then until we have a bid committee of some sort?
It's unofficial right now. There's about 15 of us that are sort of actively, it's kind of remnants of the exploratory committee, but when the process is defined more through the U.S. Olympic Committee and the IOC of how we're going to actually put our name in the hat for 30 and 34, that process and the steps will become more clear, and eventually a bid committee will be put together.
So again, when does the IOC is scheduled to make a decision then on 2030?
It's honestly, they haven't put out a timetable. So they agreed to some reforms to the process, and we're kind of in a wait and see mode of what that timeline will be.
Okay. You were also recently named as Rotary president. So what does that mean? Just
no, that was Colin
DeFord.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
We are confused. I am confused.
I got plenty to do.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to think, yeah. Okay, anything else, Colin, that you wanted to mention?
Just the fact that we are extremely set up for people to come visit us at all of our facilities. We're in high season with the Olympic Park right now. We have new activities happening with the zip tour and along with our bobsled rides and all the other activities. We'll be reopening our alpine slide in about probably a month or so, and that will be pretty special. So we encourage everybody to come out. Also over at the Heber Valley, we got the Sheepdog Classic coming up in August, and we've got a lot of great plans going, and our staff is knocking it out of the park. So please come and visit our Olympic and Paralympic venues.
Okay. Hey, Colin, thanks for getting up early to come join us.
Yep, happy to. Thank you.
That's Colin Hilton, CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as the Utah Legislature's Reform Task Force tours the state, the Utah House Democrats have also been hosting their own town halls to hear from the public about what they'd like to see in the state's tax restructuring efforts. Since the Tax Task Force has not scheduled an event for the Wasatch Back, House Democrats have planned their own in Heber City next week. Joining us with a preview and to talk tax reform, I have House Minority Leader Brian King, who also represents a portion of Summit County in District 28. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks, Leslie, for having me on.
Yeah, so House Democrats scheduled their first town hall before the legislative task force even had one planned. Were you trying to beat the task force to the punch when it came to messaging?
Well, we were definitely trying to respond to people's concerns. We thought that, you know, the first thing that we're trying to do is gather information, listen to, well, actually, the first thing that we're trying to do is explain to people why we're even discussing tax reform up at the legislature, because we never felt that it was very clearly laid out why this was a topic of conversation in the last session. And so we do have some structural issues to deal with, I think, that would best be dealt with at the legislature. So we're working hard on that to try to explain to people why it is that we're talking about it, and then to gather information from them about what they'd like to see on that kind of thing. So we just thought, in light of the timeliness of it, there was no reason to wait, and we wanted to jump on the ball as quickly as possible.
So how do you think the Democrats' presentation of the tax reform efforts are differing from what people might hear at one of those task force meetings?
Well, I think that one of the things we were trying to do, we didn't come to this with a plan or an agenda in terms of what we wanted to see, so much as we, again, were trying to educate folks about what the problem was, number one, and number two, throw out some options that existed, and we tried to make those even-handed in terms of how we discussed them and presented them. I think that the task force is doing the same thing. I think there's a little more of a emphasis on the need to eliminate some restrictions and earmarks that are currently in the budget in terms of how we spend our money with the task force. But I don't know that they're a lot different. I've heard from people, I haven't been to one of the task force meetings yet. I'm planning on going to one of the task force meetings that are coming up. But I think that the whole idea here is people need to, Utahns need to be aware of the kind of issues that we're dealing with up the legislature and recognize it's more likely than not we're going to have some changes in how the budget is structured. Those may have an immediate and significant impact on how, you know, people, what they see their money being spent for and how they see their money being earmarked.
State Representative Tim Quinn has told us that basically every option for tax reform is on the table: a carbon tax, restoring the full tax on food, a sales tax on food, raising property taxes. What would you like to see in a final bill?
Well, I would like to see something that moves, that makes sure that the most vulnerable folks are not impacted more greatly than they already are by taxes. One of the things we did back in 2008 when we passed the single rate tax is we basically got rid of any progressivity in our tax code, in our income tax code, that is. And I think that it would be a helpful thing, quite honestly, to get back to a point where we say to folks who have done really well in this economy, the Utah economy, of course, has done great for many years now, and that we say to folks who have done well, listen, we think that you need to step up and make a little bit more of a contribution. I'd like to see progressivity put back into our income tax code. That's politically a heavy lift. But there are other issues that aren't such heavy lifts that I think also help working families and those who are more vulnerable, such as I don't think it's a good idea to put back in place the full sales tax on groceries. I think that's something that we've got to push hard to, you know, the reduced tax. Right now, the sales tax for groceries is significantly lower than the sales tax on other types of items. It's not zero. I'd like to see it go to zero, but we, at the very least, need to preserve the lower rate that it's at now. I also think we need to put in place a state earned income tax credit. This is something that benefits working families the most. It was something that actually Ronald Reagan, when he was president, pushed very hard. We put that in place on the federal level. I think by all accounts, it's been a good thing in terms of reducing poverty. And so, you know, if you have a tax credit for the first, for the people who are not earning more than a certain threshold that's relatively low, you're going to ensure that they have more income to help with their basic needs. And I think we ought to put that in place on the state level, too.
So what about amending that constitutional amendment that requires that money from the income tax go into education? Would you like to see some changes to that?
Well, that's a very controversial thing in the sense that we've had that in place now, an earmark for decades, and it's ensured that there is a regular flow. All of our income tax money now goes to public and higher education. So the question is, do we want to get rid of that in order to basically give the legislature greater latitude to spend money on things other than public or higher education for the income tax fund? And the thing that I have as a concern about that is some people say, let's get rid of it to give us greater flexibility. Trust us with the legislature. We'll give as much or more money to the public and higher education that way. Well, I just don't think there's any good reason to believe that's true. I mean, unfortunately, our legislature, a majority of our legislature, has shown over many, many years that they're quite stingy in terms of allocating more funds for public and higher ed. And it frustrates me. The Park City School District, of course, has led out on this issue in terms of making more funds available for their kids. I think that's just tremendous and commendable. I wish every school district did that. But Park City School District is in a bit of a unique situation in terms of the dynamic that you've got with second homes and relatively high median incomes up there. So I think in what we're going to need to do is keep that earmark in place until and unless the legislative leadership comes up with some sort of other alternative that provides greater assurance that more money than we currently provide public and higher ed will go to that those two things in the future. So I'm not writing off the idea that we should get rid of the earmark, but I am saying I'm not going to get rid of the earmark or vote to get rid of the earmark until and unless I see something better in place that provides greater assurances that more money will go to our kids.
So have you attended any of the task force public meetings?
No, I haven't attended any of the task force public meetings as yet. I've had a couple of conflicts that have come up. There's one that is scheduled for the 30th, and I can't remember off the top of my head what location it's at, but that's the one I was planning on attending. Mm-hmm. I do want to go. It's something that I'm very interested in. I've served for many years on the House Revenue and Taxation Committee where these bills go, and this is such a critically important issue. It's a dry issue. You know, it's the kind of thing that a lot of people tune out on when you start talking about, but boy, is it important. Our priorities are no more clearly revealed in how we spend taxpayer money on the things that we choose to spend our taxpayer money on, which is one of the reasons that I look at our situation involving our public and higher ed systems of being 51st in the country when you include the District of Columbia. And I say, my goodness, if we don't start spending more resources for educating our kids, we're going to be in real trouble in the future.
Yeah, so have you been able to make it to some of the Democratic-hosted town halls?
Oh, yeah, I've gone to all of them.
Okay.
I'm sort of the point person in terms of leading the discussion. I'll be up there in Heber City next Tuesday, and looking forward to that. We really are excited about coming to the Wasatch back, and think that'll be a great thing. And we scheduled that because we did find that the task force wasn't going up to Wasatch and Summit at all. So we thought, well, let's take our presentation and take it up there. So I'll certainly be there. Hopefully I'll see you and other folks from Wasatch and Summit counties.
Yeah, that's, again, Tuesday the 16th, 6:30 p.m. at the Wasatch County Senior Center. I mean, so what are you hearing, though? I mean, is it just confusion still about why we're doing this, or are you seeing some specific recommendations?
Oh, I think there's some clarity coming to it. I think people are gaining greater understanding of it. It's interesting. One of the things we do, we make this an interactive thing when we go up. We have a whole bunch. I present for about the first 20 or 30 minutes about why we're there, why we're talking about this at all, and what options are on the table. We don't pretend to provide every option, but we talk about a lot of different options, including removing the earmark on the education fund for income tax for the education fund. And then we take a break, and we take about 20 minutes for people to walk around and go to various posters that are put around the room that have each one of these options and put post-it notes on the posters that say, I'm for this, or I'm against this, or I have a question about that, or here's a comment that I think is you should be aware of with regard to a state tax on tourism, for example. I mean, one of the things that we could do, and it's an option that we hold out, is taxing at greater levels those services and goods that are identified more with tourism. And I think that that's something that Wasatch and Summit, I'd be very interested to hear what folks up there think, because, you know, that's a critical part of the industry. So I think that people, you know, in our meetings, people have liked the idea of a carbon tax. They've liked the idea of a tourism tax. They've not that this is scientific. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 8 or 10 people commenting at any particular meeting. So I think that they're very skeptical about putting a full sales tax back on food. They're skeptical about removing the earmark. That's our sense of it. We're actually going to put together a report and put on our webpage, all sort of a report that puts together all the comments that people made and our evaluation review of those, so that people can say can take a look at our webpage and see exactly what we were talking about at our meetings and what people were saying in response.
Yeah. There are two Democrats on the task force, Representative Joel Briscoe and Senator Karen Main. Representative Tim Quinn told us he feels that the political spectrum pretty well represented on that task force is that it reflects the makeup of the legislature. Were there any other voices that you would have liked to have seen on that task force?
Well, I think you got to bring people in who have, if you're talking about, you know, we talked about HB 441, which was Representative Quinn's bill in the last session. That was the idea of putting sales tax on services. And one of the things that concerned me about that is that I didn't feel that we had very good input from the services that were going to be impacted. And we heard about that through lobbyists, and we heard about it after the session. So to the extent that tax reform in the future moves in the direction of putting a sales tax on services, I think we need to look very carefully at how that's going to impact things, how that's going to impact services. And the problem got with that kind of thing is you can easily and quickly divert, end up with a lot of unintended consequences in terms of people avoiding the tax to the detriment of Utah's economy without us really understanding why or how that happens until we hear from people who are going to be affected by it. So you got to get input from the people who are going to be affected. So I think in answer to your question, because the tax reform task force is looking at the broad array of potential items to be concerned about, it's, you know, I want to hear from the public. I think, I don't know that I feel the need to have anybody else on the task force. There are two non-voting people from both the House and the Senate who are on there, and they've got some good people on there. I mean, Kristen Cox, who is the governor's advisor on the budget, is on it, and a couple of other people whose names escape me right now who really have some good background in terms of tax policy. But I think what's critical is that we listen. And I think what's critical is that people show up and provide input on this thing.
All right. And real quick, Representative Quinn had said he has no idea when a special session would happen on this. Maybe nothing actually happening until next year's general session. What's your sense?
That's a great question, and I don't know how likely or unlikely it is that we're going to see a special session. I've talked to various members of leadership on this. Some say they don't think so. Other people say, oh, it's got to happen. We're going to see it. My personal opinion on it, Leslie, is that it's not likely to happen this year, and the reason for that is this is such a complex, difficult issue. I think until we get a better sense, a better consensus emerging on what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, that it's probably going to be pushed down the road. I don't know that we're going to deal with it in the 2020 session either, because it's an election year next year. And so I think people are going to be a little concerned about messing around too much with tax policy there and anything controversial. So the thinking is, if it doesn't happen in a special session, it's not going to happen until 2021. That may be right.
Okay. Again, if people have something to say, they can show up Tuesday, July 16th, 6:30 p.m. at the Wasatch County Senior Center. Again, this is for the House Democrats Town Hall. We've been speaking with State Representative Brian King. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:42. Well, the Park City Council met last night and heard overwhelmingly from the community on the State Route 248 project. Here with a recap, I have Council Member Steve Joyce. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. The general consensus, I think, no more asphalt, yes to more buses, but we heard from Alfred Knotts that the road isn't wide enough for buses currently. So is the UDOT plan the most practical solution?
Well, it depends what your goal is. Practical from UDOT's standpoint, they really did a pretty good job, if you look at what they normally do, of how to get more cars flowing more smoothly in and out of town. The problem is that that kind of goes head-to-head with our whole transit-first mentality of, you know, buses first, then pedestrians and bikes, then cars. And this is really focused around cars. And so that's where I think we're kind of broken.
Yeah. So does the city have a say in how a road is used?
Yes and no. I mean, if you went to the letter of the law, UDOT could kind of come down heavy-handed. It's their highway, and they could sort of do what they want with it. It's really unlikely. They've been working really closely with us. Some of the people looked and said, oh, it's going to be so wide and everything. If you look at what UDOT normally does for lanes and stuff, it's like 14-foot lanes, 10 to 12-foot shoulders. Immediately we went, no, you can't do that in our stretch of town there. They dropped to like 11 and 12 foot lanes, 5 foot shoulders before they even really got everything started. So they've been very responsive. I don't know how they're going to receive the idea of, because I know they looked at things like bus only lanes, but that's kind of where we want to push. So I'm not sure where we're going to go, but it's been a good project together. And we have the advantage that Park City is basically at the end of these roads. Normally a state highway is going to go from, you know, West Valley to Sandy or something like that, and they may interrupt some things along the way. Here, these roads pretty much dead end in Park City. I mean, 248 really does, and 224 essentially does.
Yeah. Why not just though one lane? I mean, where we have buses coming in the morning and buses going out in the afternoon. Is that enough, or is that like a no way from UDOT?
We'll have to see. I mean, the challenge they had is if you add lanes like they talked about to fix the flow right now, you're looking at a $60 million project. And if the only thing you put down those new lanes was a bus, and we don't have, I mean, we're not LA, we're not New York, we don't have a ton of buses flowing. It's harder for them to justify a $60 million project that's going to have a bus every 10 minutes. And so you're literally going to have a lane sitting there. So this is where you start getting into ideas about, well, what about shuttles? What about HOVs for multi-occupancy vehicles?
What about trains and monorails?
You know, I don't think anything's off the table, but, I mean, they certainly don't do that. So now all of a sudden you're back to the city trying to come up with $100 million-ish dollars or something for that. And even then you start going, how do you justify that with the amount of people coming in? So we got some work to do. The thing of leave it like it is and use that as a constraint is a problem, because we know that right now if we have a bus, like the bus that comes in from Camas, it gets in that same line of traffic as everybody else. And so right now we really can't convince people. It's like, oh, we'll build a park and ride out there and you take the bus in. If the bus sits in 40 minutes of traffic, no one's going to do it.
Right. So is it an all or nothing choice here?
I really don't think so. When they actually do the proposal, there's the preferred alternative, which is what UDOT has, and there's something called the no build, which says we don't do anything. We'll see where we go and how much flexibility is really there, but we don't believe it's an all or nothing choice.
Meanwhile, both Park City and Summit County are spending money on installing chargers for electric vehicles. We're encouraging electric cars. And, you know, when it's on the road, it doesn't matter what kind of car it is. A car is a car.
Yep.
So is the council here walking the talk here? I mean, you say you don't want more cars, but it's like, oh, here, we'll give you free electricity for your electric car.
Well, it's two things. I mean, I think you're looking at something that's going to be kind of a generational change to really make the kinds of differences that we're looking at. So one is get people out of cars, certainly single occupancy vehicles. So even if it's just, you know, instead of you driving your car to come skiing and meeting me who's driving my car to come skiing, if we would carpool together and come, that's a step. If we're going to drive that car, if it was electric, that's a step. If we can actually get you on the bus, that's a huge step. But we know right now we can't run the buses everywhere all the time, you know, at the level that people need. So we recognize that it's not going to be suddenly be 100% transit, you know, ever.
Yeah. Well, the council did instruct the drafting of an official resolution committing to a transit-first policy. Do you really think that's going to help get people, more people on a bus?
No, it's not going to help get people on a bus. What it does is it provides us kind of a stronger leg to stand on when we're talking to either the Utah legislature, UDOT, groups like that, where we can say this isn't just kind of a whim of council. This is a policy that we have put in place. And you can even see it. Like UDOT actually, as part of their process, went through our general plan and said, you know, what is it that this town has said is their priorities? And so it's this stuff matters. It's not like going to convince somebody to get on the bus, but it will certainly shape our policies for a long time to come.
So what happens from here?
We will put together, the royal we, UDOT and Alfred and company, will put together a summary of all the comments that they got. They will group them up. They will respond to them. They will figure out what kind of impact those things might have on the plans, hopefully find some good ideas. And then we'll probably end up with the county, the city, UDOT sitting down and trying to figure out what the next logical step is.
Council also received an update on the Arts and Culture District process. That construction's still years out. What were you encouraged to hear about?
To me, the interesting thing is they're really starting to get to the point where they're going to bring City Council back something to look at. I mean, this is real, you know, building plans, the design of the 5.5 acres there at the corner. And shortly after they bring it to council, they'll bring it out in a series of open house kinds of things where the public can get a good view of it. And then hopefully right after that, they'll drop into the MPD process. And all that should be happening early fall, like September-ish, October. So that means we'll finally, you know, soon we'll actually get to see what this thing's going to look like. And that's pretty exciting.
Okay. The council, I think you're also scheduled to approve a, what, $160,000 fee waiver to Kimball Arts Center to help free the fest?
Yeah, most of that's been nailed down as part of the contract. You know, we do multi-year contracts with them. And last night was just kind of the final details on kind of what's changed plan-wise from year to year. And I think, last year we had fee waivers of $152,000 or something, and this year it's $160,000. So, it, you know, if you just simply did inflation, it fits right about there. But, you know, this wasn't any new news. The only real new news was a little bit of discussion about their locals night, which I think you've already had some discussion with them on. Instead, what they've historically done for Kimball's is locals, which would mean either primary or secondary homeowners, could come Friday night for free. This year, as part of their celebration for their 50th Kimball Arts Festival, they're taking all the primary residents and allowing you to come for the entire festival for free. But as part of that, just from a cost standpoint, they didn't do the secondary homeowners. And we had some discussion about, you know, what did that really mean and what were the impacts?
Yeah, so, bad PR maybe.
Well, and you know, at some level, we kind of looked at that and went, you know, that's really their call. It's their festival. We don't really want to get into that too much. Tim had some discussion about, well, we do have some input since we do these big fee waivers. But, you know, to me, I personally look and I go, you know, part of what we're doing is mitigating the impacts of, you know, if you're a resident here, you get hit with these events all summer long. And this is just kind of a nice thank you. So...
Finally, wanted to ask you, Park City Visioning 2020, the survey, what, online through the end of the month?
It is, and we'll certainly appreciate getting all the input we can there. We'll also have some special groups going a little deeper dives on that. You can find that all on the parkcity.org website.
Okay. Anything else, Steve?
Yeah, just one quick one. I want to say thanks to the community. We got some updates on our water utilization over the past couple of, I guess it's almost two decades now, since 2000. And in the last 19 years, we've dropped residential water use 42% and irrigation use 38%. And that is astounding. And when we talk about how water shortages in the West are going to be a big, big deal, it's incredible to see what Park City's done over the last 20 years, 19 years.
Yeah. Any updates on the hole there?
Yeah, just a quick one. Yeah, the way you reported it earlier today is pretty much spot on. It's not truly a sinkhole. It's just the water as it rushed out, washed some of the road base out. So that's pretty easy to fix. Probably did come from the paving that got done. It probably broke a valve under the road. And they've got crews over there fixing it right now. So your advice of avoid the area is the right one. But it's the water's off. No one's without water. I guess that's a real important one. And just stay out of the area. Fifth and Park is the area to avoid.
Okay, Steve, thanks for coming in. Park City Council Member Steve Joyce. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. 8:53 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, after a few injury-filled seasons, Park City's Ted Ligety got back on track this past winter. He joins me now with a look back at the season and a look ahead at what's to come. Good morning, Ted.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, your last victory back in October 2015, and then some things went downhill. You had torn hip cartilage and torn ACL in your knee and aggravated your back again, and then surgery in January 2017 that ended the season early for you. So you're healthy and pain-free at this point?
That's a pretty bleak recap, but I'm feeling really good right now. Just training every day at the US Ski Team gym, and yeah, I mean, I'm 34 years old, almost 35, and so that's a lot of hard miles on my body up to this point, but I'm still enjoying it. Right now I feel really healthy and trying to get to a point where I feel I can win races, and yeah, that's the goal right now.
Sure. So ski racing, I mean, we know it's hard on a person's body. At what point do you say, I've had enough and I want to walk when I'm 60?
I'm probably closer to that point than further away, so this year I'll definitely go one more year. I'm not only going to do Giant Slalom this year, so it'll be a little bit easier schedule on my body. I'll be able to be home a little bit more as well, so I'll come home after every race and fly over 8 days before a race and get some training over in Europe before the races, and that should hopefully be easier on my body. And then we see. I mean, I would like to keep going as long as I feel like I can win races and I feel good. I mean, feel healthy. That's really the biggest part. And, you know, nowadays I have, you know, a 2-year-old son and that stuff. So that there's more factors than there was when I was, you know, 25 years old.
So after this season, then it's going to be just kind of a year by year thing, you think?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I would love to keep going, but I don't want to keep going if I'm not able to win. So that's the biggest thing, I guess.
Yeah, and I was going to say the best result that looked like last season for you was an 8th in GS in Beaver Creek, a mountain that you really like. And certainly winning is motivating. So, I mean, how do you stay motivated? I mean, to keep, you know, to get to that point back to winning again.
Yeah, having a season like last year is definitely a good motivator for sure. You know, I had back surgery 2 years ago, and then last year before my back was okay, and then last year my back wasn't that great. So when you're struggling through that all season and trying to ski on icy, bumpy trails all the time, it definitely didn't feel great. So hopefully this year I'm able to figure out a way to mitigate those issues, and then I feel like I can be back on top again. When you're always trying to ski through pain, it makes it really difficult. So yeah, I feel like if I can get back to that point, and I feel like I can, I have definitely still, like, I feel I have those skills and have that intensity. It's just a matter of, you know, getting to that point and staying healthy.
Yeah, so limiting it then just to the GS, you think will make a difference?
Yeah, I think being able to focus on just one event. My entire career, I've been one of, like, the few guys that has skied most events every single weekend, so that's been a lot of hard miles on my body. I think I have, you know, 300-something World Cup races, which is a lot of races compared to most people, so yeah, a lot of hard miles, and I think just limiting it to just a Giant Slalom, and which has been my bread and butter for most of my career anyways, I think that allows me to focus and ramp the miles down a little bit, so that should be easier on my body, and also gives me more time in the gym and more time to really take care of the things that I need to be taken care of to keep my body going well.
Yeah, so what does your summer look like then? You get a little bit of a break?
Yeah, I'm in the gym every day right now, so right after I leave here, I'm going straight to the gym, and mountain biking and running in the afternoons and just working out in the COE every day for about 2 to 3 hours. And then we go to New Zealand in August for about a month. And that'll be my only camp this year. I normally go to Chile, but that was more a speed-oriented camp, so getting a little bit more skiing in New Zealand, and then head over to Europe in October and start racing.
Yeah. Do you ever get tired of the snow? That's a lot of snow.
Well, there's no snow here right now, so this is my break right now. So it's awesome to be back in the summer times here because, you know, I love mountain biking. I love being in this area in the summer. It's so nice. So, no, I don't get tired of the snow, but it's nice to have a break too.
Yeah. So we had our best powder season in a long time. Did you get some of that?
Not really, man. I always miss the goods in Park City, that's for sure. That'll actually be the nice part about only skiing Giant Slalom this year is I'll be able to be home and you'll be able to ski up at Deer Valley a bunch and, you know, be able to ski with my son in Park City more. And that'll be fun. I mean, I haven't really spent a winter in Park City in probably 20 years when I haven't been injured. I had those couple years where I had surgery where I was here during the winter, but I wasn't skiing. So that'll be nice to be able to be here a little bit more during the wintertime.
So you got Jax on skis already?
Yeah, Jax just turned 2 a week and a half ago, and yeah, he was skiing starting in November last year, really. So it's been fun, and you know, now we live close to Round Valley, so we take him into Round Valley on the Strider or the Mack Ride, and he just loves, you know, going fast on that stuff too. He's always telling me to go super fast, Dada.
Great. So you just wrapped up your summer ski camps at I think Mount Hood. You started those with a former teammate Andrew Weibrick. You've got Megan McJames, Steve Nyman, even the Mayer brothers helping you out on those camps.
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, we've been running. Andrew and I. We have another guy that runs it for us basically, and I've been doing those since 2005 maybe, so a long time, and it's just been fun. It's good to be able to go to Mount Hood, which is the mecca of summer skiing in the United States. It's really the only place you can ski there in the summertime consistently every year, and to be able to see those kids, their excitement and their enthusiasm for it's really fun to watch, and be able to try to inspire some of those kids. I was lucky enough when I was probably 11 or 12 to go to ski camp with Tommy Mill coaching for a few days, and that was really inspiring for me. So that was a big motivator for me to go up there and try to inspire some of these next generation kids coming up.
Yeah. Also, you co-founded the company Shred in, what, 06, 2006, yep. Making goggles, sunglasses, bike, and ski helmets. So you've moved the headquarters into the Iron Horse District. How's that business doing? Good?
Yeah, it's been fun. Shred's been a really fun business. We do protective gear for skiing, snowboarding, mountain biking, as well as eyewear. So that's been fun. It's a really busy part of my life for sure. And especially in the summertime right now, it's when I can really spend the most time on the business. And yeah, we're there on 1260B Iron Horse. So if anybody wants to stop by, they're welcome to. We have a little shop in there and a showroom. So people are welcome to come stop by there. But that's been fun. It's really fun looking at the world that I do every single day in the ski world or mountain biking. But from the business aspect is a good perspective for me as an athlete, but also it's fun to try to like use my brain in a different way.
Yeah. So any other kind of business plans for you in the future? I mean, should you kind of look ahead after skiing?
We'll see. I mean, my plate's pretty full with that. I mean, when I'm done ski racing, I'll definitely be able to jump back into that more full time and on the day to day. Right now, you know, with my travel schedule, you know, I come up with a lot of like strategy ideas and all that stuff, but I'm not the person executing on all those ideas, so it'll be fun to be able to dive back into that more and not have to be delegating quite as much and be a little bit more involved in the day-to-day.
Okay. Well, stay healthy. We'll look forward to seeing you again. You're planning on Solden then, opening in October?
Yeah, that'll be the first race, end of October, exactly.
Okay. Good luck, Todd. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's Olympian Ted Ligety and Park City resident. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.